WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And joining me on the Commons today, we have a lovely lady, an attorney in Las Vegas, Nevada, called Mari Parlad, who has been through the ringer and has been through the HOA nonsense for quite a while. And she's going to be talking to us a little bit about her observations of what's going on in Las Vegas and what's happened to her. Mari, thank you so much. It's been a while getting you on the air with me, but I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Sue. Anything I can do. And again, it's Mari Parlati with Parlati Law. Thank you so much for having me.
The FBI is investigating a whole lot of fraud and corruption in Las Vegas. Is it just Las Vegas or Nevada as well?
So far, I believe it's focused here in Las Vegas and Park County at this point.
And the focus is predominantly on construction defects, right?
Yes, it is. At this point, it appears that way.
And one of the things that they've done is gone in and cleaned up associations where they've been having problems with voter fraud, ballot stuffing, and all of that other wonderful stuff. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, the interesting thing is in each of these cases, in construction defect cases, you'll find it's the same culprits, the same management companies, the same attorneys, law firms, and construction companies that are involved, basically targeting different HOAs or working with different boards of directors on HOAs. I haven't exactly been involved in construction fraud or construction defect cases with my HOAs, where my focus has been more so with HOAs, and I've come across some things, though, that I believe are insurance fraud with HOAs, and that's why I honestly believe right now what the FBI is focusing on is just but a piece of the puzzle of what's really out there. The HOA corruption is a much larger picture involving different aspects, construction defect fraud, insurance fraud, and voter fraud, other areas.
Well, I agree with you. The other day when we talked, you talked a little bit about insurance fraud. The FBI is not really looking into that, are they?
It doesn't appear so just yet, or at least it's not publicized yet. It's not to say that they're not looking into it, of course. But, I know that insurance fraud is a very big cause of action. It's a very big deal. And what I've come across is just but a piece of the puzzle, again, a small glimpse of it. And this was a few years ago. And I'm currently in the process of trying to prepare something to give to the FBI, maybe point their eye towards what I came across with my cases here.
Explain to us what you mean by insurance fraud. What's happening here?
My theory is that what we have are different parties. First, I have to step back, talk about the different parties involved in this kind of insurance fraud or HOA fraud. What we have is the HOA, which is governed by a board of directors who are very influenced by the property managers and the attorneys that come on board. Now, there's two types of attorneys that are on board. There's the attorney on the front end that serves as the counsel to the HOA, that advises the HOA, and it's the attorney's duty is to, you know, make sure the board is following the Nevada revised statutes and properly enforcing the CC&Rs. Specifically, the board has a duty to uniformly enforce the governing documents, the CC&Rs. With regard to imposing fines on property, they must be sure that they're abiding by the statutory procedures of the Nevada Revised Statutes, Chapter 116. And the attorney is supposed to more or less advise them as to abiding by those rules, you know, when the issue was presented to the attorney. That's the attorney on the front end, I like to say. And then now the attorney on the back end is the insurance attorneys. All of these board directors, they must have errors and omissions insurance in order for them to serve in that capacity on the board. Now, in the event that a complaint is filed against the HOA and against the board, and that complaint alleges allegations of negligence, then it would fall into the purview of the errors and omissions insurance. That would then be activated. And now the attorneys that are hired by the insurance companies, these are what I call the insurance attorneys, now come into play to more or less defend the HOA and defend the board in these allegations of negligence. Of course, if fraud is alleged, then that would take them outside of the purview of the errors and omissions insurance. Now, what I've come to find as a result of one homeowner coming to me who was a victim of selective enforcement, excessive fines, whose house was being foreclosed upon as a result of a construction penalty statute where basically, in essence, these are homeowners associations that have raw land out, and, you know, basically clients or homeowners are allowed to purchase the raw land, and they must build within a specified period of time, let's say 2 years from the date they purchased. They must have built the property, or let me back up a second. They must have at least submitted plans for the development or for architectural review plans for the board to review and go ahead and approve. After that, the homeowner must then build on the property and have it constructed within another year or two, let's say, for example. This construction penalty statute, or CC&R caption, more or less, I view now as a cash cow for the HOAs, because if the homeowner fails to build by the prospective deadline date of, let's say, 3 years, 2 years by providing the architectural review paperwork and then another year to build out, if they fail to build, then the sky's the limit. They can impose fines on the homeowner at a daily limit pursuant to the CC&Rs. And the Nevada Revised Statutes does not place a statutory cap on the amount of construction penalty fines that can accrue on a person. As opposed to regular fines such as failure to take the trash out or failure to cut your weeds, there are statutorily imposed maximum ceilings that can be fined on a person, and you cannot foreclose on a homeowner for failure to take out the trash or failure to cut your weeds. But the construction penalty fines, on the other hand, failure to pay these assessments or these accruing fines for failing to build on your property, you can be foreclosed by the HOA. And this provides the HOA with significant leverage now to impose construction penalty fines on a homeowner for failing to build on a certain date, and then also now honing in on the homeowner by foreclosing on them. This, I found that the HOA that I was dealing with was selectively targeting specific homeowners by imposing these construction penalty fines upon them and attempting to foreclose on them. Now, the Nevada Revised Statutes requires that all of these, you know, this construction penalty fine or this rule must be uniformly enforced among all the homeowners. Here we found that only the homeowners that were vulnerable and were elderly were the ones being targeted. There were some homeowners that had purchased property and had it there for 5 years. They were owner builders. They were builders, and they were known to purchase the property and then later on go and flip the property after a few years of holding it for maybe 2 years or so as raw land, not developed or in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But these people, they weren't being fined in any way. You know, they had purchased not just one or two, maybe five or six different properties in the HOA, and it was vacant land for 5 or 6 years. Now, the homeowners that I found were being targeted were the ones that came to me, and this is, you know, initially just one homeowner would come to me, and he was an elderly man in the middle of a divorce proceeding with his wife. And at the time, pursuant to the rules of court, when property is part of a divorce proceeding, neither of the parties, husband or wife, can sell or do anything with the property because it's tied up in a preliminary injunction pending the results of the divorce. You know, it could either go to the wife or it could go to the husband. At this point, neither of them knew, so they were advised by their attorneys not to sell or dispose or even build on that property because neither of them wanted to live on that property, and it's easier, more marketable to sell it, liquidate it to someone else after the divorce proceedings. Well, the HOA still continued to impose construction penalty fines upon him because he had not built on his property. He came forward to the HOA and explained to them, listen, I can't build. I'm tied up in divorce proceedings right now. I've been under advice by my attorney. I have to wait until the divorce proceedings are done, until we can sell it. I'd like to sell this property. The HOA was oblivious to it. You know, they wouldn't make an exception. They wouldn't make an extension for him. And as a result, they started to accrue fines in the amount of $3,000. Next thing you know, it's $7,000. When he came to me, he had a lien on his property for $14,000, and they were attempting to foreclose on his property because he hadn't built out by then. Then I would find that there's another homeowner, more severe. This one, he was suffering from colon cancer and renal failure. And he went to the HOA and told them, I'm dying. I'm terminally ill. I've been missing a lot of work. I'm having trouble supporting my family, let alone pay these fines that you've accrued on my property. At that time, the fines were $5,000. They were threatening to foreclose on his property. And he explained to them, it's not possible. I can't build on my property at this point. I'm so busy going back and forth to the hospital for dialysis and treatments. And he was the sole breadwinner of his family. And he requested for an extension with which to at least allow him to sell the property and for them to put a stay on all the fines that were accruing on a daily basis. Although at meeting the HOA agreed to, 4 days later he receives a letter from the HOA attorney stating that they're going to institute foreclosure proceedings because now it's a $5,000 assessment or a $5,000 penalty fee on his property.
Wow.
And this one was horrible. I really felt for this man. I met with them after the fact, significantly later, after he had already left the HOA because he was dying and he just couldn't take the callous disregard for his suffering. This HOA was really in it for the money. They wanted their money from him. He ultimately just tried to sell it for whatever he possibly could and sold it for $40,000 less than the fair market value just so he can get rid of it. Just to get out. And in the end, he had to pay $9,000 out of escrow to the HOA for this supposed construction penalty fee. And even looking at all of the construction penalty fees, they would just, the HOA attorney himself would send letters to this poor homeowner that was dying, demanding for $5,000 and the next letter $6,000, $7,000. And pursuant to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, whenever an attorney or anyone sends a letter demanding for a bill or demanding for payment due, there are certain languages that must be provided pursuant to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. It must say this is a debt, this is an attempt to collect a debt, anything, more or less like Miranda rights for the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And this attorney didn't even put that on there at all. And when the client or the homeowner requested for justification, explaining how did it come to from 5 to 3 or 3 to 5 in just a matter of days, the attorney's office never responded or never provided any justification. The homeowner hired an attorney at that point to try to resolve it, but the HOA's attorney, didn't work with them. And that's why the homeowner just said, I'll just sell the property for less and pay whatever you need to do the HOA to get out of it. They came to me after the fact only because the first homeowner suffering through the divorce, I was filing a lawsuit on behalf of him, and that's when the one suffering from colon cancer came to me and shared his story with me. Because what I ultimately ended up doing was, initially I was just going to file a single complaint on behalf of the homeowner with going through the divorce. Then I started to find that there's a pattern here. They're targeting the people that are in a position where they can't build or they're really at a standstill. And so I filed a RICO action, a Racketeering Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act statute in federal court against the HOA. At this point, I wasn't aware of the insurance fraud yet. I just viewed it as a racketeering case where they were using the HOA as an enterprise to extort these funds from these homeowners. In many ways, there really wasn't even a basis for doing so because, in essence, it could be viewed as a waiver. They weren't uniformly enforcing the construction penalties throughout all the homeowners. There were many homeowners that did not get any fines or were given, numerous extensions. But only these specific homeowners who really were at a point where they couldn't afford to fight or couldn't afford to do much were the ones that were being targeted. And I personally view it as very inhumane for someone to go after someone that's dying of cancer and try to foreclose on his home. So initially I just filed it as a Racketeering Influenced Corrupt Organizations Act statute against the HOA property management company and the attorney on the front end.
You included the attorney.
On the front end, yes, because of his violations of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And as an attorney, I'm giving you a very general overview. I haven't really gone into the specifics. And the reason I say that there wasn't a basis for going after some of these homeowners was because the one with colon cancer, for example, he was only on that property for 6 months when he received a letter stating you're in violation of the CCNRs for having failed to provide us with documentation in the architectural review build-out plan, which was due, on May of this year, for example. He was only there for 6 months. He has 18 months to provide that. But they were calculating the dates incorrectly, and this is the property manager who was calculating the dates incorrectly, giving him frivolous deadlines.
Right.
And they were saying, you know, you owe $3,000, but they don't even know, they couldn't even provide where's this $3,000 coming from. It's just a number that was pulled up from out of the air. And as the attorney has a duty to, you know, verify what he writes, whatever he writes to the client. He's an officer of the court, but he's just basically doing whatever the HOA is saying, taking their word as gold and writing these letters to these homeowners, foreclosing on them without even a basis for doing so, because the deadline had not actually, had not even passed for these homeowners.
But Mary, I think you've just hit the nail on the head. Some of these attorneys, they just do it for the ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. You're right. They have a duty to figure out, to know what they're doing. I mean, I don't know why they don't feel stupid standing there going, oh, well, gee whiz, I didn't look at that. But they don't do that.
They just take what their client says at face value. And, you know, and I know it's difficult because when my clients come through the door, I don't try to second guess my clients either, but I have a duty to verify the facts and to make sure that what they're telling me is correct for fear that maybe the client misunderstood. Clients are not attorneys. These are lay people. They don't know the law. They may have misapplied things. They may have miscalendared something, and that's where we come into play. We're supposed to be held to a higher standard to be able to advocate for them, but also advocate the law as it applies to our clients. And sometimes I feel as though it's been, you know, they advocate more for the client as opposed to the law. You know, they're failing to apply the law to the facts. And that's where I named the attorney's office also in this lawsuit. And, you know, I started to see, and when I filed this lawsuit, it was interesting because now people started coming out from under the woodwork by filing this lawsuit. This was actually my second lawsuit against that same HOA. Another homeowner had come to me also for being aggrieved with selective enforcement as well. So I was already fairly familiar with this HOA. Well, the interesting thing is now when I filed this lawsuit, I already had liens on, you know, the homeowners, there were liens on his property, the one with the going through the divorce proceeding. He had a lien and he couldn't sell his property. Well, now the interesting thing is now people started coming out from under the HOA, and not the board members, but other homeowners started coming out, sharing, divulging information to me, telling me, you know what, they're not the only ones. Your clients that you have are not the only ones. I've been a victim of this, too. And then all of a sudden now homeowners just started calling me, telling me about all the abuses and corruption occurring in that HOA, and not just having to do with construction penalties, but even just, you know, simple fines, failing to take out the trash, failing to cut the weeds. Those are subject to statutory limitations. You know, there's a cap on how much you can fine a person for with regard to taking out his trash. But these homeowners were saying, well, no, the HOA was fining me double, triple. You know, they weren't even accounting for, they couldn't even do the math on the billing statements. They're just telling me I owe this much. And it was all pursuant to, you know, then they receive a letter from the attorney also, you know, basically backing up what the HOA is saying. And then the interesting thing, my most interesting person that I met with was a person that was on the board. He was at the time a treasurer on the board, and he was the oddball. He came to me and he told me, I don't agree with what my board is doing. I really don't. I'm the treasurer, and I'm sitting here questioning a lot of their acts, and they're giving me hell for it. Oh, excuse my language, but he said, you know, they're giving me a hard time for it, and now that I'm questioning it, they're just shutting me out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things that he was questioning is he said, you know, I owe a fiduciary duty. I'm treasurer. I have to make sure that the HOA is spending the funds as, you know, properly. And he said, and now the property manager is coming to me. The property management contract says that they get paid $600 a month, but she's coming to me with the bill for $2,500. And before I sign this check giving them $2,500, I'm going to ask, why is this $2,500? It's four times more than the amount you're supposed to get. And, you know, when he questions them, oh, the whole board, they jumped on him. I can't believe you're doing this. What is wrong with you? You know, he said, they turned on me like I'm doing something wrong.
I've seen that so many times.
Yes, and same thing with the attorney. He was saying, you know, the board is paying this attorney $15,000, and I'm asking the board, what did the attorney do? We're paying him $15,000 from a business point. What did he give us in return? What have we been able to recoup? Oh, we were able to recoup $5,000 worth of fines from a home from this. But he said, wait a minute. He said, you guys are going to spend $15,000 to get back five? Does this make any sense? And they just looked at him, and then from then on, they just shut him out. And so he came to me, and he really wanted to make, you know, make things right. He said, I don't want to be part of this. Now we're involved in a lawsuit. He said, because I was suing the HOA, the board, for corruption, self-dealing, fraud, etc. And he said, I don't want to be brought down with this. I want to make things right. Whatever you need from me, I will tell you. And then, you know, I just was taking in all his information. You know, it was a lot of information coming all at once. And this is my first really big HOA case I was working on. Then I just, you know, started to put all the people together. You know, why don't you call so-and-so because he's called me. And so all these homeowners now started coming together. Not with me. I would just, you know, basically connect the dots and have them talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, they would call me and ask me for assistance, but I explained to them I can't necessarily assist you because I'm suing the HOA. So I would refer them to the ombudsman. And fortunately, we had a very good experience with the ombudsman, with one person, I believe his
name. Who was the ombudsman at the time?
The ombudsman was Eldon Hardy, but the investigator that they spoke with, I believe his name was Jerry Thompson.
Okay.
He's no longer with us. He's since deceased, but he provided tremendous assistance to these homeowners, you know, pointed them to the right direction and did tell them that they could overturn the board if they got together a petition and showed them, you know, basically walked them through it. And so the next HOA meeting, my clients wanted me, of course, at the meeting because we were suing the HOA, and I was informed by these homeowners, these new homeowners, I like to call them the revolutionizers, who wanted to overturn the board. They said they wanted to present the petition that day, and they wanted me to be there. And so, you know, I attended the meeting, and I actually attempted to call. By this time, we were already in litigation. So I attempted to call the insurance attorneys. This, again, now are the attorneys that represent the HOA in the litigation, but not so much advising the HOA. They have the front-end attorney who was advising them with things to do. That was the one that was named in the lawsuit. The insurance attorneys were not named in the lawsuit at this point because I was still naive and I didn't think that there was any wrongdoing on their part at that point.
So is that when, at that point, did they take over the insurance attorneys?
Yes, the insurance attorneys, once a lawsuit has been filed, you see, the attorney on the front end is the one that advises the board, you know. Or maybe misadvises the board is probably what the terminology is. And the way I view it is I think he does enough to... you know, for the board to commit negligence but not fraud. He backs the board up with everything. And the way I view it is really they target these homeowners with the intent that the homeowner will file a lawsuit against them. And I think it's ridiculous initially, but it makes sense now. Because, you see, once the homeowner, you know, the homeowner comes to me and they say, we've been a victim of selective enforcement, we have this and this and this. So I look at it, I say, you're right, you have a good chance here of succeeding. Let's file a lawsuit against the HOA because they committed negligence, fraud, or negligence and wrongdoing. So we file a lawsuit against the HOA. Well, by filing the lawsuit, that now triggers the errors and omissions insurance. And now the big firms, big insurance attorneys, now they come into the picture, and they're now defending the lawsuit. Meanwhile, though, you have the attorney on the front end still advising the board to continue doing the same things that brought about the cause of action that's occurring in litigation. So I contacted the insurance attorneys, and I tried to inform them. I said, well, you know what? I think you guys should know something. You know, you have this attorney here on the front end advising your clients to do these certain actions, which are basically the gist of your lawsuit, that you're having to defend against. Maybe it would be advisable, or maybe, you know, are you aware of this, basically, is what I asked them, you know, because it's making it more difficult, I would think, for them to defend their lawsuit when their clients are continually doing the same wrongdoing that was the purpose of the cause of action. And then they just looked at me like, yeah, so what's your point? And I just thought, well, you know, as an attorney, I would tell my clients, cease and desist with what you're doing because we have to defend against it. And they just looked at me, well, you know, that's how it is. They didn't really say it, but I got the feeling of that's how it is. What are you trying to say? That's how it's done. You know, that's when I just started thinking, wait a minute, maybe, you know, they know about this and they're just, you know, and I started wondering, you know, why on earth would they want the attorney on the front end to misadvise their clients to do this when in the end they're just going to get sued? And I thought, oh, that's because they're attorneys and that way they'll continue to get paid because they'll have this lawsuit that can drag on and drag on and drag on. And that's precisely what happened. Back to that board meeting, we attended the board meeting, The attorneys that were in the litigation didn't feel it was necessary to attend that, and I can understand because it wasn't a litigation board meeting, it was just an HOA meeting. Well, the homeowners presented the petition to overturn the board, and the interesting thing is the attorney on the front end was there, the property managers, and the old board was there. And, you know, the attorney looked at it and said, okay, we'll take it under, you know, we'll do a secret ballot for it. You know, that's pretty much what the procedure is. I made a mistake of slipping my mouth, more or less. I said something, and I said, well, what's the use of doing a secret ballot when it'll be conducted by precisely the people that the homeowner is trying to overturn?
That's right.
And then he said, well, that's the way it's going to be done. And, you know, in my opinion, it came out very quickly, and I said, well, you know, this is how can this be fair when it's a corrupt process? We have a corrupt board, a corrupt attorney, and a corrupt property manager working in cahoots here. And, you know, for saying that attorney tried to file a defamation action against me because I expressed my opinion. I honestly believe that, you know, First Amendment, freedom of speech, the HOA has been held by many cases to be like a democracy, like a town hall meeting, a public meeting. These are homeowners here. I viewed it in the best interest of the public. They needed to know that, you know, people that are sitting up there on, you know, making decisions for them are working in cahoots together. Truth was an absolute defense for me, and I had some homeowners and people that were ready to testify on my behalf that truth was an absolute defense, you know, very supportive of my position, or of my defense in the defamation action. Unfortunately, my attorney feels that we may have gotten the wrong bite of the apple when it comes to arbitration because we were placed in arbitration and the decision went sour.
The decision went sour. We're talking to Mari Parlati. She's an attorney in Las Vegas, and she's been through the ringer personally and with her clients. You're talking about, you're basically telling us, Mari, that the industry, the HOA attorneys were intimidating you as well, not just the homeowners, but intimidating you as well, right?
Oh, yes. Now it got to the point, after the HOA meeting, when they received the petition to overthrow the board, now it got to the point that the insurance attorneys, along with the HOA attorney and everyone, they were trying to now bombard me with this paperwork. I'm a very passionate advocate, but I admit I was a one-man firm. I did everything on my own.
You know, you're not the only one, though, because there was an attorney that I spoke to from California a number of years ago who had a client, a homeowner, and she told me that she got visits from HOA attorneys who walked into her office, threatened her. They told her that if she didn't drop the case, that they would bury her in so much paperwork that she would not be able to take care of her paying clients.
Oh, exactly.
They bullied and threatened her.
I completely agree with her because I went through the same thing at this point, and you know,
You had the same thing?
I had the same thing. Well, what happened is, you know, we were able to fortunately overturn the board and get the new board on there. So now we think all is clear. Finally, you know, we can breathe. We've had justice served. The old board is off. But no, that was just the start of everything. Because now when we got the new board on there, and I don't know if you recall, I mentioned that one of the members of the old board, the treasurer, was very adamant about changing things. Well, right. He was the only one that was kept. He was now the president of the new board. And then we had other people, other homeowners who were very active in my whole litigation in the beginning, who now ran for the new board. Now they were on the new board. So now we think everything is clear, everything's fine. Well, the new board, once they get on, the first thing they want to do is dismiss this litigation. You know, they don't agree. They did not agree with what the old board was doing. They didn't agree with all these frivolous fines and liens that were placed on homeowners. You know, you had homeowners coming to meetings complaining and yelling and hating the HOA because of these frivolous fines and liens. So the new board took a position, and they put in the minutes that, you know, based upon the inconsistencies and the, you know, the litigation that had occurred as a result of the old board's doing, we will take it upon ourselves to impose a blanket amnesty upon all the homeowners, meaning they're wiping the slate clean, they're removing all the fines, all the liens. From that point on, everybody has zero. You know, there's there goes the cash cow for the HOA, right? That was how the old board was getting the money from the homeowners, putting money into the HOA to give to the management company and attorneys and whatnot. But now this new board is saying, you know, we don't want any part of that. We want to wash our hands clean. So they did that. Well, by removing the liens from my client's property, as an attorney, I have no basis to sue the HOA because my client has not been damaged anymore. And now I know that this new HOA wants nothing to do with this lawsuit and wants nothing to do with harming my client. So at that point, before, you know, my clients were told me, you know, let's remove the lien. And I conferred with the State Bar of Nevada Office of Bar Counsel on numerous occasions throughout this whole ordeal because I was getting, you know, calls from the other attorney, or I was getting threats, not necessarily personal threats, but just, you know, we're going to disqualify. They did a motion to disqualify me. They were threatening a motion to disqualify me from the lawsuit for talking to their clients, the new board, you know, because the insurance attorneys were saying, those are our clients and you're speaking with them. So I contacted the State Bar of Nevada Office of Bar Counsel, and I would confer with them. In addition to conferring with my mentor attorneys, I would confer with State Bar Counsel and I'd explain to them, here's the situation. You know, we have an old board who's represented by these insurance attorneys. The old board is no longer there. Now we have a new board. And the new board has already informed me that they want to release all these liens and fines. They don't want part of this lawsuit. And more importantly, the new board informed me they don't want this insurance firm representing them because they could see through everything. And they saw that the insurance firm wanted nothing more than to prolong this litigation so that they could continue cranking the attorney's fees wheel. And, you know, the new board wanted to cease the litigation. So they sent a letter to their insurance firm telling them, you know, in light of the fact that you represented our old board, we are in, you know, direct adverse positions from the old board. We do not believe or support the things that they did. We would like to remove all the fines and liens. We'd like to dismiss the litigation. We feel that your services are no longer necessary. They were trying to fire the insurance attorneys. And that's when they came to me, because they tried to come to me to work with me, and I told them, I can't talk to you because you have the insurance attorneys. And they explained to me, well, we don't want the insurance attorneys. We want to work with you because we trust you. I said, well, you'll have to first fire or, you know, deal with your insurance attorneys first. I didn't say fire. I said, just, you know, talk to them first.
Right.
So that's what they did, and they sent a letter saying, you know, we don't need you. We don't want you. Then they called me back, and they said, okay, we fired the insurance attorneys. We don't want anything to do with them. Can you please help us dismiss us from the lawsuit? We already took the liens off your client's property. Why are we still named in this lawsuit? So, you know, I talked to State Bar Counsel, and I explained to them, and I said, you know, I want to make sure that I don't do anything that's unethical on my behalf because of the fact that, you know, this is now still the same entity. It's still the same association. It's just now taken on a new persona. It's a new board now. And I wanted to make sure that there was nothing wrong with me dismissing them from the lawsuit, you know, and considering the fact that they had called insurance attorneys and fired them. State Bar Counsel said there's absolutely nothing wrong with what you're doing. If anything, it would be a violation, an unethical duty for you to continue to have them in the lawsuit if they don't even have any damages upon your client. And I agreed. So, you know, I was on top of it with the State Bar to make sure that nothing I did was unethical. And so I went ahead and prepared a stipulation, and I dismissed the old board, or the HOA, from the lawsuit. Now, this is where it gets interesting, because in the stipulation that I prepared, I was under the impression that the insurance attorneys were no longer attorneys there. They were fired. So I prepared, pursuant to my conversation with the State Bar of Nevada, I prepared a stipulation stating that, you know, the parties, in light of the fact that the liens have been released, the plaintiffs herein will dismiss the HOA and the HOA board from the lawsuit. But that's not to say that the HOA is, the plaintiffs will dismiss the HOA and the HOA board from the lawsuit and from any and all liability incurring from the negligence, you know, fraud, actions and omissions resulting from the other parties, namely the property manager who's still involved and the attorney who's still involved. And then we filed that with the court. And the judge was very astute, the U.S. District Court judge, by noticing that not only did he signed the order, but he even said, as a result of this order, the insurance attorneys are hereby terminated from the lawsuit. See, the judge terminated the insurance attorneys because he sees it's no longer necessary for them to be there, considering the fact that the HOA is no longer in the lawsuit. Well, the interesting thing is, now, after all of this is occurring, Now the insurance attorney calls me. Same day, actually. The insurance attorney sends me a letter and basically says, how dare you dismiss our clients from this lawsuit? How dare you communicate with our clients? You know, we demand, you know, you violated your ethical duties by communicating with our client, and, you know, we demand that you cease and desist and remove that stipulation and keep our clients in this lawsuit. How dare you dismiss
keep
them?
Keep our clients in this lawsuit? Yeah. Is that what they said?
They said no. They said we demand that you remove the cease and desist with a stipulation and the stipulation in order, and you know you have no right to dismiss our clients from this lawsuit is what they basically said. And I'm thinking, well, you know what? If I was I don't know, Shu, but if you were you and you were a defense attorney and your client was sued in this big racketeering cause of action, and then all of a sudden now your clients are dismissed, wouldn't you be happy because your client's no longer party to this racketeering cause of action?
Absolutely.
But, you know, that's finally where it dawned on me that, you know, this is a much bigger picture. I should be including them in the lawsuit because, you know, what basis would they have now other than to continue this lawsuit for you know, in order to crank that attorney's fees wheel? Why else would they want their clients party to a racketeering lawsuit? And it also makes sense is because they had to cover the butts of everyone else in order for, you know, these insurance firms. They were there to basically, they were also... This is where another conflict of interest comes into play. These insurance attorneys not only represented the board, but they also represented the property managers in this lawsuit. There's a conflict there because the board and property managers were, you know, when it was the old board, that's fine because they were all acting covertly together. But now that we have this new board here, the new board was in direct and, you know, a direct opposite position as the property management company. If anything, they were putting the blame on the property management company. And this insurance firm continued to represent both parties. And, you know, under the ethical rules, this insurance firm should have withdrawn immediately once the new board took on the position because they should have noticed that there's a direct opposition between the new board and the property management company. More so, there's a direct opposition between the new board and the old board. So, but the insurance firms didn't withdraw. It wasn't until after I filed my stipulation and until after the judge said that they're terminated from the lawsuit that they finally filed a motion to withdraw because, you know, their client was terminated from the lawsuit. But not only did they file a motion to withdraw, because I didn't redact or, you know, cease and desist with my stipulation, they filed a motion to disqualify me also. Because, you know, I was allegedly speaking with their client, who, after talking to the state bar, it was clear that I didn't think they were represented, and I had to go ahead from the state bar, because it was clear that, you know, the new HOA didn't want anything to do with those insurance attorneys. So it was interesting, and not only did I get this motion to withdraw and this, you know, letter from the state bar from the insurance attorneys, but I also got a complaint to the state bar from now the attorney on the front end. You know, they're all working. This is all exactly the same time. The attorney on the front end now files a letter to the state bar, a complaint against me for arguably communicating with his clients, to overturn and, you know, basically just to make me do more paperwork, in essence, and to detract me from the lawsuit. You know, so I'm sitting here doing a State Bar of Nevada defense, and then I'm also doing an opposition to a motion to disqualify, and I'm trying to see to it that my clients' interests are all served. You know, my clients are happy now at this point because they no longer have a lien on their property. They're able to focus more so on the real culprits to this case. The HOA is happy now because they no longer have to be party to this whole litigation. But now, you know, the attorneys are now coming after me for exposing all of this. So it was all just a very big headache. And suffice it to say, in the end, my bar complaint was dropped, of course. You know, I explained it all to the state bar, and it was dropped. The case that was sitting in the U.S. District Court for racketeering languished on for many, many months. The judge never did decide. By the time it was probably 9 months later, and the judge still had not decided upon the motion to disqualify me. You know, and that I thought was rather odd.
9 months.
9 months it was taken under advisement. Still nothing was done. Ultimately, in the end, the party stipulated, even though I wasn't happy with it, the party stipulated to just dismiss the whole thing only because the clients couldn't afford to pay attorney's fees anymore. I had worked about maybe $10,000 in over my head, and the clients couldn't afford to pay me anymore. I was drained dealing with bar complaints and everything. I wasn't getting paid for my work. I was, you know, I have a family to support myself here, my three kids. So it just ultimately got to the point where everybody would have agreed to just a dismissal and, you know, just walk away from it. And as much as I wish I could have afforded to continue it, I couldn't fight all these big firms without getting paid a penny for anything. I just don't have that kind of money on me right now. So at that point, that was a few years ago, and, you know, the man that had colon cancer, he has since deceased. He's no longer with us, and, you know, I really feel for him because he was put through so much. He and his family were put through so much from that HOA, and I really start to see now the bigger picture, you know, with that insurance attorneys, they really wanted this lawsuit to continue. And the goal that they want for every homeowner is they want their attorneys on the front end to advise the board just specifically enough to do something that's on the brink of negligence so that the homeowner will file a lawsuit against them. And hopefully because of the ombudsman case, one of my cases did end up going through the ombudsman's, my other HOA case. And, you know, if it goes through the ombudsman's, which is because the Nevada revised statutes states that in any cause of action between HOA and the homeowner dealing with when it pertains to the CC&Rs, it must go through the Nevada Real Estate Division's ombudsman for the common interest community.
Let me ask you about the ombudsman, Mari. All the articles that I've been reading lately, it seems like the ombudsman has done absolutely nothing.
Unfortunately, that's how my clients feel as well, and that's how I would feel as well. You know, it's the way I would view it is the ombudsman is like a speed bump to prevent the client to have his day in court. The client ultimately wants to have his or her day in court. Unfortunately, in order for him or her to have their day in court, they must first go through this ombudsman program where they go through alternate dispute resolution. Typically, they choose an arbitrator, and the arbitrator is paid to basically preside as a neutral arbiter to render a decision. But, you know, as I'm sure you're probably aware, it's very different here from my view is from a monetary perspective. If an arbitrator is working and they want to be chosen, of course, to preside over these cases, it seems as though the big firm, the big insurance firms, who are the ones that have the upper hand to continue to be in these cases to choose the arbitrator would want more so to be chosen again by the insurance firm so that they can, you know, continue to preside over cases.
That's exactly right, and that's a point that's been made over and over and over again. ADR arbitration, a lot of homeowners think that it's cheaper than it is to hire an attorney. It's not. And you're not going to get a fair trial or a fair hearing. And the other thing is that the decision of the arbitrator is not public. It's private.
It's not. And the sad thing is, like with my homeowner, not the one that I'm mentioning here, but the first homeowner that I had, we went through the arbitration system because I didn't file a racketeering case on this. That was the prior case that I had. And in that case, the poor homeowner had to incur thousands and thousands of dollars in attorney's fees to fight this arbitration, to hire me to go through this whole arbitration process. And in the end, you know, they were just out of money by the end, you know, because the insurance attorneys were, you know, pulling up any and all legal maneuvers, deposition after deposition, you know, interrogatory after interrogatory, just trying to pull out any and all legal maneuvers because knowing full well that the homeowner can't afford all of this. And sure enough, in the end, when the arbitrator's decision came down, which was, of course, in favor of the big insurance companies or the HOA, who was represented by the insurance companies, the insurance firms, in the end, the client, of course, has the option to file a trial de novo and take this now to the courthouse. But my goodness, that's a year and a half later after expending over $60,000, $70,000 in attorney's fees. They don't have that kind of money.
But even if you go back to court, I mean, the judges tend to look at it a little differently. They don't they? They're not looking at this with fresh eyes. They're looking at what the arbitrator said, and then taking it from there.
Even though it's supposedly called the trial de novo, meaning they're not supposed to look at it, we all know that. You know, how can you not?
Mari, let me ask you something. You know, the case that you were telling us about sounds a whole lot like Desert Carmel in Arizona, and it's a case that I interviewed the attorney Melanie McCaddy there a few weeks ago, a few months ago maybe, and the players from that HOA were also from Las Vegas. I don't know if there's a connection there or not. I don't know if it's the same players, the same, you know, any of that. But how prevalent do you think it is? Are these just two isolated incidents, or do you think this sort of thing is happening more and more?
I believe it's happening more and more. I honestly do. This was, put it this way, I'm not a big HOA attorney. I don't have lots of cases. Of the two cases I have, they're both having to do with this. That's a 100% chance right there, a probability. It's happening more and more. And, I'm at the point, I've been approached by other homeowners who wanted to also file lawsuits against their HOA for specific performance. But after having dealt with these two, I would sit the client down and I would tell them, legally speaking, you do have an excellent case. You have a valid position. They violated the Nevada Revised Statutes, and I would tell them their legal position. But I would be honest with them, and that's probably what sets me apart from other attorneys. I would tell these clients, but from a, practical perspective, I don't know if it'll be, you have to decide whether it's worth it to spend all these thousands of dollars up front only to get possibly nowhere in the end. And I would explain to them, in summary, what my client, former clients had to go through. And, in the end, I would be embarrassed as an officer of the court because, coming from a small town university of San Diego, I was, instilled in the values of upholding the ideals of integrity and justice and fairness and fighting for what you believe in. But it's just not the case when you're in a system that's so biased or, in favor of, It's a capitalistic society, and it's not just out here in the world, but also in the legal system in many ways. I'm starting to see that, and it's very unfortunate. And that's why I do have a shred of hope with the fact that the FBI is doing this investigation, albeit right now it's in the construction defect realm. But, if they can, this is just a piece of the puzzle, as I said, and I'm sure that, the FBI is astute, and they're probably investigating other matters as well. They just aren't publicizing it. That's why I'm, eager to try to do what I can to assist in that endeavor.
Mari, you talked about fines. I'm a big advocate for banning associations, preventing associations from fining people. There are two cases, one from Virginia and one from Rhode Island, that say that fining is unconstitutional. I also think that HOAs should be prohibited from foreclosing because they do it way too readily. And the HOA attorneys, they have this huge network that goes across the country, and they're all sitting there in the background coaching each other on what to do because you hear the same problems. Yeah. One state after another state, the harassment that I had heard about years ago has been echoed, and now you're telling me that you've also been harassed and abused by these attorneys, by the HOA attorneys. There's something seriously wrong with this concept.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is. There definitely is, and I would hope that it would change. And initially, I was very frustrated with this whole thing, and at this point, I really, other than speak out and advocate with you and other advocates like us, I really don't know what else can be done. I'm really putting a lot of hope in the FBI and maybe that the system will uncover something. But, it goes so deep. The level of corruption, I guess you can say, it goes so deep. It's not just here on a community level. It's even, this organization or this, this enterprise, they have people working at the lobby, the legislature, that are lobbying for certain rules because it's not, it's also, if you look at the statutes, there's loopholes. Why is there a specific loophole for construction penalties? Why aren't there any maximum, statutory maximums for doing construction penalties? Why are you allowed to foreclose specifically for these construction penalties? So it's everywhere. I don't want to be naive and say, yes, I think we can change it because it's literally, it's everywhere. And if we can't, unless we get some, spread the awareness to other people and maybe hopefully empower people and motivate them to come forward and make a change, this system is going to continue doing what it is. I view it as a self-perpetuating bureaucracy is what it is, from the legislatures to from the lobbyists to the agencies that are here supposedly to address these concerns, to the attorneys on the front end advising the board, to the property managers who are also assisting in the whole advising scheme, and then, of course, ultimately to the insurance attorneys who drag this out as long as they possibly can until finally the homeowner cannot afford to pay their attorney's fees, coupled with the homeowner is also paying the fees of the other side because that's their homeowner's dues that are going towards the attorney's fees.
I hate to be pessimistic about the whole thing, but a number of years ago, the same thing happened in New York City, where the mayor went in and really cleaned up. I mean, it was real estate agents, it was management companies, it was the attorneys, it was everybody involved. There was so much fraud, corruption, embezzlement, you name it, cleaned up. And it was 2 years later, had to go in and do the same thing. I'm sure that, you know, it needs cleaning up again, because unless you have someone who's on top of them constantly, like the FBI is now, it's, you know, they're going to go back to doing whatever they can get away with. Mm-hmm. And the sad part is that by doing this, it's sort of counterintuitive, because HOAs were set up basically to give government a sort of free taxes and get them out of the loop, get them away from having to deal with all this stuff. So why would they then expend the finances to come in and constantly clean up? And that's what it's going to take. Mm-hmm. I think we need to start asking the tough questions. Is this a viable form of housing? And I don't think so.
And one of my questions is the ombudsman program, for example. Why isn't it governed by the Attorney General's office? The ombudsman program, which is held to, you know, decide over these homeowner disputes, which pretty much goes to the heart of our property rights and our constitutional rights, you know, a lot of it is freedom of speech as well and freedom of expression, putting signs up, you know, how you live in your own property. You know, a man buys a home and that home is not really his to do what he sees fit. He's subject to the rules and regulations of the HOA, which is run and governed by not the Department of the Attorney General, but rather by a business and industry department, the real estate industry.
Real estate industry, and it's the same CAI, Community Associations Institute, people who are now sitting on that panel that Senator Schneider put together to oversee. So basically, the fox is guarding the hen house. I told him at the time it wouldn't work. It's not working. And he's complaining about it now, but I don't know if he's going to do anything about it.
It's just, you know, when you're looking at the severity or the level of, you know, the way I look at it is you look at the rights on one hand. You know, what are we losing here? We're dealing with homeowners' rights. We're not dealing with, you know, just money. We're dealing with their actual liberty rights, their actual property rights, with how they live, being foreclosed upon their actual home. The American dream is their home. We're dealing with rights, and, you know, we should have the a commensurate level of oversight conducted by the appropriate agency that has the jurisdiction to deal with these type of rights. And a Department of Business and Industry does not necessarily have the jurisdiction,
I agree.
And that's why, you know, the only way to get out of the whole ombudsman realm is to file a RICO action. When I filed the When I filed the RICO action against the HOA, I talked to Steve Urbanetti at the Ombudsman Real Estate Division, and I explained to him, you know, I'm not going to be filing this in the real estate division because we have allegations here of fraud, we have allegations of racketeering, we've got violations here of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And he agreed. He said, oh, now those matters are not within the jurisdiction of the Ombudsman's office. And I said, I agree, and that's why we're filing it in federal district court. But see, not that many people know that. They're going to think that the statute says, oh, it's an HOA action, so you must file it here. And, you know, these arbitrators don't have the jurisdiction to impose the types of treble damages that racketeering, you know, necessitates.
Mari, we're out of time, but thank you so much for coming on. You've added a whole new dimension to this whole stuff that's going on in Las Vegas. Keep in touch. Good luck.
Oh, thank you very much, and I hope we can spread the word and make a change.
I hope you'll come back, and maybe we can do it again sometime.
Definitely. Thanks a lot, Sue. You have a great day.
Thank you for joining us today. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. Thanks again for joining us.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.